Welcome to Our Interesting Times with host Timothy Kelly, who interviews today's top alternative and revisionist thinkers.
May you live in interesting times.
My guest tonight is Dr. E. Michael Jones. Dr. Jones is a historian, prolific writer, and editor of Culture Wars magazine. Among his many books are The Jewish Revolutionary Spirit and Its Impact on World History, The Slaughter of Cities, and the most recent, Barren Metal, A History of Capitalism as a Conflict Between Labor and Usury. His books and a subscription to Culture Wars can be purchased at culturewars.com. Dr. Jones, how are you doing this evening?
Good. Good to be here.
Thank you for your patience with my technical difficulties. So, well, listen, we've had a recent, scandal, so to speak, I guess you could call it, regarding these WikiLeaks email of John Podesta. And his, I guess, these date back to maybe 2012 or something. It's John Podesta discussing a plan to further co-opt the Catholic Church with a creation of these just AstroTurf Catholic groups. This was Catholics in Alliance for Common Good. And this has caused an uproar among right-wing Catholics or conservative Catholics that he would work to, subvert the Catholic Church and further into some sort of political agenda. Have you given this issue any thought?
Hello?
Hello, can you hear me?
No. You cut out about – you're going to have to repeat the question because you just cut – you're cut out.
Oh, okay. Back in action. Okay.
We got the John Podesta, the WikiLeaks, and where does it go from there?
These emails that are detailing, I guess, this discussion going back and forth between John Podesta and Sandy Newman – and Jennifer Palmieri, and they're discussing this strategize to form this forming these sort of these AstroTurf Catholic groups, liberal Catholic groups like Catholics Alliance for Progress or Common Good. I think it's
Isn't the guy who was the guy you mentioned? The other guy?
It was Sandy Newman.
Sandy Newman, didn't he say that we need a Catholic Spring?
Yes.
Catholic Spring.
Yes.
Well, first of all, let's get one issue out of the way right from the start. If they're talking about a revolution in the Catholic Church, they're about 50 years too late.
Yes.
The revolution took place beginning in the period from 1965 up until 1967, Well, let's go back a little bit. The Rockefellers got in 1962 when they funded a secret conference on contraception at Notre Dame University. That secret conference went on for 3 years, from 1962 to 65, and the purpose was to overturn the church's teaching on contraception. The Rockefellers were obsessed with differential fertility. They thought the Catholics were having too many children. And so they funded this conference. The culmination was came 2 years later. The thorn in the side of the Catholic hierarchy was Charles Curran, the professor of moral theology at Catholic University. In the spring of 1967, the bishops let Curran's contract lapse. He did not have tenure. They simply did not renew his contract. This sparked a revolution at Catholic University. It was led by Dan McGuire, a Philadelphia priest. A bunch of other people were involved, but basically at this point, the bishops backed down. They reinstated Curran, and when they did this, everyone knew they had been defeated, and the revolutionaries were emboldened. At that point, 2 months later, Father Hesburgh at Notre Dame, who had hosted the secret conferences, stole the university from the Catholic Church, alienated the property, put it under a lay board of trustees, and that's where it's been ever since. 1 year later, the Pope issued, Pope Paul VI issued Humanae Vitae, and then the revolution really came out in the open. All of these professors at Catholic U who had defied the bishops now defied the Pope, said they weren't going to accept it. It was a huge uproar, and that was the beginning of the revolution in the Church. So sorry, Sandy, you're 50 years too late. Okay. But this doesn't change the fact that their intentions are still the same. It's a new group of people. I mean, what we're talking about 50 years ago is the last hurrah of the WASP elite, the rock symbolized by the Rockefeller family. Now we have many more Jews involved. The Jews were involved then, but as a separate entity, they've kind of merged into one ruling class of oligarch ruling class. Back then, the Jews were involved with school prayer. Those Supreme Court decisions took place in the around the same time, a little bit before 65, 63, around that time. So the revolution has been going on for some time now. So there's no point in, that horse is out of the barn. But as I said, it does clarify the intentions of the Democratic Party. And it also gives some indication of how confident these people are in their new form of psychological warfare, namely color revolutions. That's what's changed since that time. Now the color revolution is used all over the world as a way of overthrowing governments that they disagree with, and they think they can do it with the Catholic Church. Well, good luck, fellas.
Yeah, there's in these emails, there's talks of, I guess, forming or creating flash mobs or fake protests outside bishops' offices, and the same thing you might have seen in the Ukraine or in Egypt, or
it's not going to work. We've already had a revolution, and those revolutionaries are all dying. They're way behind the curve here. The first revolution was the sexual revolution. And then at the second revolution was the neoconservative economic revolution. And that took place beginning in the 90s, when basically the conservative movement, the Jews took over the conservative movement. They were called neoconservatives, but basically they took over the movement. And their causus belli at that time was Pat Buchanan, the Catholic guy who was the Hitler of his day. The new Hitler, 1992, the Jews were freaking out over Pat Buchanan. So I don't know where these people have been. I mean, have they been in a cave in Okinawa or something like that? They didn't hear that the emperor surrendered. I don't know. I don't know what they're talking about.
Well, it does give us some sort of insight into the thinking of these people. Although I'm not too surprised. I wasn't too surprised about it at all. I'm sure these types of discussions go on all the time. In fact, I hear them all the time about backward Catholics and bowing to a dictator in Rome. At the same time, they're criticizing the bishops for opposing a mandate, from the president regarding healthcare, an HHS mandate that would require. Yeah. These Catholic institutions to subsidize abortion, contraception, and many other things, and then they're decrying medieval dictatorships. So what's more dictatorial, though? I mean, than that, making a Catholic church or institution support something that their teachings and their conscience tells them is evil. I mean,
I think we need to take a step back at this moment and say I'd like to say that the big issue right now is whether the media is going to succeed in getting Hillary elected. And the big contest here is between, it's basically between WikiLeaks and the mainstream media. Who are you going to believe? Who are you going to believe? The mainstream media have been campaigning for Hillary Clinton for months now. There's no, absolutely no, not a, the faintest doubt in anybody's mind that there is no journalism involved here. It is all pure heavy duty campaigning for Hillary Clinton.
Well, that's I think that is isn't even debatable. I mean, when you talk about the media, it's not just the news media; it's entertainment. It's the you know, it's the comedy, the comedy shows Saturday Night Live or the Comedy Central or Steve Colbert or John Oliver. These guys, they're also in the tank for Hillary. It's obvious. I mean, to the point where I made the observation that if you watch the Saturday Night Live bits on the debates when they have Alec Baldwin playing Donald Trump, and you have this young girl playing Hillary Clinton, they exaggerate Donald Trump's foibles, which is fine. That's political comedy. I understand that, but they understate Hillary's in these things. I mean, it's like there's no comedy regarding her health issues. There's nothing like, they could do a lot with that.
That was one of the issues here.
Yeah.
For anyone who questioned her health, was a right wing, conspiracy nut.
Mm-hmm.
And then she leaves the 9/11 demonstration. She's waiting for a van. She takes one step and collapses.
Mm-hmm.
And then suddenly the mainstream media have to say, well, I guess it's a real issue. So they had to back off on that. So the question is, do they still have the power? This is a life and death struggle. This is a life and death struggle. The credibility of the mainstream media is on the line here in this election. And largely because of WikiLeaks. We have a whole new source of inside information. This compromises, this undermines the foundation of their power. If they can't keep their own communication secret, they're going to lose their power because their whole, once you get an empire in this era, the era of information one way or the other, if you can't control the flow of information, you can't control the empire. That's the issue.
Did you catch Donald Trump's remarks at the Al Smith dinner?
I didn't. What happened? Tell me.
I
was on the road doing a speaking tour, so I was in frequent contact with the media. Tell me what happened.
It was criticized for him not being civil. It's an occasion to be to be civil to one another, tell a few jokes, but he's criticized as being too harsh in his jokes regarding Hillary Clinton. But he said things like, for Hillary, it takes a village. And in Haiti, the Clintons have taken a lot of villages. And he made remarks about, Hillary's here pretending to like Catholics. And you know, all these liberal Catholics in the audience kind of, some of them were booing and some of them were reportedly very uncomfortable with his remarks. But the funny thing about Donald Trump's remarks is, that he's saying these jokes, and these jokes he's referring to the Clinton Foundation scandals about how they've ripped off all the money out of Haiti and the disaster capitalism in Haiti, and whether it's her health and Hillary Clinton's record of corruption and all that stuff. And he even made a joke about Hillary bumping into her as she's getting her seat, and she said, "Pardon me." And he said, "We'll talk about that after I'm elected president." Okay, but there's a story behind these jokes. There's a context to these jokes that they don't even analyze. They're laughing at them, and I mean, they're so well known that you can. I mean, obviously, if you make a joke about something, that what you're making fun of has to be common knowledge, or else it won't be funny. Okay, and so, but the media focuses on the joke, but doesn't focus on the backstory, which is this, the fact that the Clinton Foundation, it looks to be it's a money laundering operation for this bribery scheme that she set up when she was at the State Department. The FBI, the WikiLeaks thing regarding the FBI, apparently making a deal with Hillary not to recommend prosecution if she expands her budgets. It's budget.
We're talking about serious corruption here.
Yeah,
corruption up and down throughout the government. And I think Trump, I just saw a speech where Trump articulated that fairly clearly. It's as everyone knows, he's far from perfect, But that's not the issue. That's not the issue. She's got, you know, people in glass houses should not throw stones. So the Clintons talking about someone else's sexual morality is, I mean, this is kind of laughable, isn't it? The same day, all right, the same day, let me give you an example. The day, the top news story, I forget when it was, a couple of days back, is Trump's locker room talk video or audio.
Yeah.
Okay, that same day, Yoko Ono announced that she had sex with Hillary Clinton. Where was that? The one guy's talking in a way that people find offensive, but it's just talk. Here's someone saying, I had sex with Hillary Clinton, and there's no story here. Where's the story? It just gets dropped. So, I mean, as I said, we're talking about the mainstream media putting everything on the line here. Their whole credibility is on the line. And the little earthquake that happened with the health thing is going to be magnified if Trump wins. All right, it's going to be the end of their credibility. Mm-hmm. They won't have any anymore.
Well, not only have they kept her out of jail, they're trying to put her in the White House.
Right. That's right.
I mean, it's just it's.
Well, it's all or nothing. Once you get in a position like this, it's all or nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So she said it herself. She said, "If he wins, we'll all be hanging from nooses." This is when it's a high stakes game.
Yeah.
You know, and I think she knows it. And I think that's part of the problem.
They call this thing, the FBI, a quid pro quo. No, this is a crime, you know, and what's going to happen, though, you know, obviously the FBI is complicit in this. So we can't rely on these investigative bodies.
You can't. Yeah. I mean, that's been a bogus operation from the time of J. Edgar Hoover. it's always been thought control, and then they get these Catholics from Notre Dame to sign up for the FBI. And what's their job? Like informing on other Catholics? There was a document. I forgot reading the document, but basically, during the 30s. The FBI was dealing with the ADL representative in Cincinnati. Well, Cincinnati, there are a lot of Germans in Cincinnati, mm-hmm. and there was some German woman's club, and the ADL guy is investigating. He's saying they're all Nazis to this FBI guy. Well, the FBI guy writes back and says, look, this is not intelligence. This is them with their agenda. They're trying to pull something over on us, and they've had this conflict ever from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Are they really law enforcement, or are they agent provocateurs and thought police? Well, once you get something like this where Hillary Clinton gets off the hook, I mean, the dial starts pointing toward this bogus operation of nothing but thought police. That's all they were. That's all they are.
Yeah, you know? And it's so obvious when Bill Clinton's meeting Loretta Lynch on a tarmac on July 4th weekend. I guess they're talking about their grandkids or something. I don't know. But also the FBI director Comey, who was never an agent, he was a lawyer who had worked for HSBC, Hong Kong Shanghai Bank, was apparently he worked for a firm that was that had donated like $80 million to the Clinton Foundation.
Yeah.
So he's connected to that, and so it's obvious. I mean, the collude or the conflict of interest is obvious. I mean, and so, you know. But again, it's one of these things where the media, they're so in the tank for it. It's so obvious. It hardly even warrants comment on it, because it's just like you just have to look at it and just go, oh well. But you make your point. It's all this information coming out with WikiLeaks about all these backroom dealings and corruption. Not to mention, you know, what's going on with the campaign with Donna Brazile, who's helping her. Against Bernie Sanders, giving her the questions, and lo and behold, the questions that's in the emails show up during the debate. So it's all, you know, I mean, I'm not surprised that this stuff is largely choreographed.
So
I mean,
it's a totally corrupt operation, and you can either vote for a continuation of this corrupt operation, or you can protest it by voting for someone who is obviously an imperfect vessel. That's what it comes down to.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about the personalities here. It's about whether you're for the oligarchic rule or whether you're against it, whether you've had enough of it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the issue.
One thing I thought was interesting regarding John Podesta and his emails was just your take on these types of Catholics, whether it's John Podesta or Tim Kaine. Now, E.J. Dionne wrote an article, an apologetic for Podesta, saying he's a devout Catholic, practicing devout Catholic. But then again, Podesta is an advocate of everything that the Catholic Church is against.
What is this? This is ridiculous.
Yeah.
This is ridiculous. The Catholics have been totally compromised. They have lost their identity. This has been a long process, but basically you can't be a Catholic in public life and follow church's teaching. You can't do it. Who has done this? Who has done this? Everyone has been compromised, beginning with John F. Kennedy.
Mm-hmm.
Can you think of any?
Correct
me if I'm wrong. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Trying to think. Henry Hyde had his scandals, but his public positions. Perhaps Henry Hyde, despite his affair scandal he had. Maybe. Am I missing something? I'm grasping for something here.
He did have the Hyde Amendment. That was his achievement, which annoys the Democrats. So I suppose, we'll give him credit where credit is due.
And you mentioned who is that Catholic politician in Philadelphia?
Yeah, Martin Mullen. That's on my mind. There was a courageous Catholic, state representative or state senator, who held up the entire Pennsylvania state budget over birth control in 1964. Yeah. A courageous man. So let's give him credit. But this is the exception that proves the rule, isn't it?
Yeah.
Isn't that what we're talking about here? The fact that we have to go to some obscure state senator from Philadelphia in the 1960s, like almost 60 years ago, kind of makes the point, doesn't it? Everyone else has gone along and drunk the Kool-Aid, and now they're involved with an increasingly corrupt and criminal operation. On top of the immorality that is an essential part of the agenda of the United States of America. So how can you support this? I was in Berlin, gave a speech in Berlin, and then we're riding around I hadn't been there in 41 years, and needless to say, there's a lot of changes in Berlin. So we arrived at the United States Embassy, and there's the bear, a statue of a bear, combination bear, which is a symbol of Berlin, and the Statue of Liberty. It's in the lobby of the American Embassy, and wrapped around the bear's shoulders is the gay flag. And then there's an announcement that, it's about Orlando. So here is an official statement by the United States government supporting the homosexual agenda. And basically supporting my claim that America has become a gay disco. Now, how are you supposed to support this? How is any man of conscience supposed to support this? And Joe Biden he's a Catholic. He's come out and praised the Jews for being behind gay marriage, at one of their fundraising affairs. It's beyond the pale. It's gone too far. And now there's a protest and everybody feels uncomfortable, but it's going to come to be a showdown between the mainstream media and all of the people who see through the mainstream media. Are there enough of them to create a course direction that will save the democracy? Or are we just going to march down the road from oligarchy to nuclear war? Which I think is just over the horizon if someone like Hillary Clinton gets elected.
Yeah, there was an ABC News political analyst, Matthew Dowd, tweeted after the Podesta leaks, and he's a liberal Catholic. He said, "My fellow Catholics, you're aware that the majority of Catholics are pro-choice and pro-gay marriage, right?"
the majority of Catholics commit sin every single day of the week. the overwhelm. As a matter of fact, there's no Catholic who doesn't do that. But what does that prove? What does that prove? It proves that you've got a machine, a cultural machine out there that is in high gear, corrupting the morals of everybody it comes in contact with. That's what we're talking about here. And you have signed on to work for the moral corruption of your fellow Catholics. Well, congratulations. But, you know, include me out. You know, there are plenty of people who are saying, you know, count me out. I'm not going to do it. I see through the thing. WikiLeaks has helped us to see through the machinations of this government. It's not benign. It is a sinister force in the world, and it deserves to be repudiated at the polls. And if not at the polls, then I shudder to think what's going to happen if the will of the majority is thwarted. That's what's going on here.
Well, I guess maybe it's a fundamental, I guess, misunderstanding or just I guess deceit on their part. They describe the Catholic Church's relationship, I guess, to its flock and its moral doctrine is sort of they call it a medieval dictatorship. And of course, dictatorships are more a creature of the 20th century and medieval period. I don't know if you describe the political system in the medieval period as being a dictatorship. It's much more complex than that. But this notion that somehow because the Church has certain teachings and it proclaims those teachings and expects its followers, that its flock to follow those teachings, that it's somehow imposing a dictatorship. I don't see how that's a dictatorship, but it's, you know, I guess they figure it sounds good, but
it sounds good. It sounds really, it sounds as if we should really be upset now that he said medieval dictatorship. I don't like either. I mean, geez, that's two bad things. It's the Middle Ages and it's dictatorship, even though they have nothing whatsoever to do with each other. Completely different historical periods. But, you know, let's take a step back here. And let's talk about the all these scandals. Let's talk about the scandal spotlight. You know, I haven't seen the movie, so I'm going to talk about it because I know the story. I don't need to see the movie. I know the story, and the story is basically that there were pedophile priests in Boston who were being praised by the Boston Globe for their innovative youth ministry. Now, this is the 1970s, and this is the way this regime works, okay? The 1970s, they work hard to corrupt the morals of everyone involved in the Catholic Church. Then when these people act on their commands and their suggestions, then they come down on them like a ton of bricks, and then now we're going to sue you, now we're going to demonize you as pedophiles or whatever. Okay, this just happens over and over and over again. So here we have the arsonists are all working for the fire department. You know, they start the fires and then they rush in and they put the fires out and they're the big hero. They're the ones who started this ball rolling. Who are the institutions? What are the institutions that set out to engage in the moral corruption of the American people? Was it the Catholic Church? No.
Well, you know, it was the media.
Are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Are you there?
Yeah, yeah. Well, it was Hollywood.
Yes. Now let's talk Madison about Avenue Hollywood. Let's talk about Hollywood. Let's talk about Corey Feldman. Look him up on YouTube. Corey Feldman went on YouTube and said that the Hollywood has rampant pedophilia. And then he named names, a director and a guy, another guy named Corey Haim, I believe, who ended up committing suicide because of sexual abuse. Now, is anyone suing Hollywood?
We're making a movie about it that wins the Academy Award.
Or no, we're not doing that because that's different. Well, I'm sorry, but we're back to WikiLeaks again, okay? We see through this double standard that you're promoting here. We understand it now. Consciousness has gone way too far for you to kind of expect us to naively accept something like Spotlight as the God's honest truth. That's not what it is. I gave that talk in Ireland. Mm-hmm. 7 years ago, when the crisis was big over there, the pedophile crisis in Ireland. Well, it's the same thing. And the church is always a day late and a dollar short. So I mentioned there that there was a symposium in Rome with all these Alexandro Magistro and Cardinal Ruini and all these leading lights in Rome. And the best they could come up with was Nietzsche and Ralph McInerney. You know, I knew Ralph McInerney when he was alive, the late Ralph McInerney. He was a friend of mine. I would eat Chinese food with him on a regular basis just north of Notre Dame. And he brought out a book called What Happened to Vatican II, and he pulled punches. I know, because I told him things he never put in there. He never mentioned anything about Notre Dame's role in the sexual revolution, promoting a sexual revolution among Catholics, because he was a professor there and he was compromised. Okay? So much as he was a friend of mine, he didn't do us any favors by writing that basically crappy book. Secondly, Nietzsche. Well, no, it's not Nietzsche. I mean, first of all, why are you bringing up Nietzsche? Cardinal Ruini says it was Nietzsche. Well, I don't like Nietzsche either, but it has nothing to do with this. Why didn't you mention Wilhelm Reich? Well, because you don't know who Wilhelm Reich is, because you're always a day late and a dollar short. Wilhelm Reich had two pillars to Wilhelm Reich's philosophy. The one was the sexualization of children, and the other one was the sexualization of the clergy. Well, guess what? That's the pedophile crisis, isn't it? You know, he was on the cover of the New York Times magazine in 1970. So you got the New York Times promoting the sexualization of the clergy and the sexualization of children. Why aren't they being held responsible? Why is it always blame the victim here?
So what we have here is you have the institutions of entertainment, education, cultural institutions like Hollywood, where they're in effect they're intentionally poisoning the cultural well, and then they're shocked that somehow an institution like the Catholic Church isn't immune to this. So that probably was their intent. So they're not really.
Let's go back to the beginning. Guess who was one of the victims of this thing? In a sense, it was Donald Trump. Donald Trump is like the Playboy. Remember Playboy magazine? Remember the Playboy philosophy? If there was anyone who ever epitomized the Playboy philosophy, it was Donald Trump, which means he was just docilely doing what he was told. Obviously, you have, you know, desires, sexual desires. This is pandering to those sexual desires. But in many ways, you're just doing what you're told, what the culture is telling you to do. You were a big playboy. So he suddenly acts on that. He's doing what he's supposed to do. We're all supposed to be docile followers of Hugh Hefner and the playboy philosophy, because that will keep us all under control. And then when he does it, then they bring out this locker room talk stuff.
Yeah. Well,
it's the same thing over and over and over again. Yeah, because now it doesn't matter. There's no such thing as right and wrong. It's the person. If we like you, if you're Bryan Singer, if you're a big-time Hollywood director, we're not going to talk about pedophilia. But if you're a Catholic priest, we're going to throw the book at you.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you're wealthy in the 1970s and young, you were told to go to Studio 54 and party.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. So he was just doing what he was told.
Yeah.
Now, do you guys... what that paragon of sexual morality, the New York Times. So which is it? Am I supposed to do what I'm told, or am I not supposed to do what I'm told?
And
according to you guys.
And the New York Times were right about the pedophilia scandal in the Catholic Church, but didn't they put Wilhelm Reich on the
cover? Yeah, so you're promoting, as I said, you're putting arsonists in the fire department.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're the guys who promoted Wilhelm Reich. Wilhelm Reich spent the early part of his life. He went crazy. I think he got syphilis at the end of his life. But in the 1930s, he was promoting the sexualization of children and the sexualization of the clergy. So why isn't the New York Times being held responsible for this? They put him on the cover. They had one favorable review after another of his works, his 1930s works, all in the 70s. It was cool to support Wilhelm Reich in the 70s. Nobody looked into this. And so, again, let's take another example. Daniel Cohn-Bendit. Danny the Red, the guy who was the responsible for the the front man for the 68 revolution. Well, it turns out that he was having sex with children. He said this in his memoir about Kommune 2 in Frankfurt. And then when they caught him on TV, he's trying to back away like, well, I didn't. Well, that's what you said in your memoir. That's what was going on there. That was the platform of the Green Party in Germany for the entire decade of the 1980s. So this, why aren't they being held responsible?
This were these red daycare centers?
Absolutely.
And they openly advocated pedophilia.
That's right. It was not only they didn't advocate it; they practiced it.
They practiced it, but there was a strategy to this, because didn't they believe that this is how you spark a revolution?
Well, that's what Reich said. They were who do you think they were following? Yeah. They were following Wilhelm Reich.
Yeah,
he was their guru in the 70s, and even throughout the 80s, the Green Party was campaigning on a platform of abolishing consent laws. You know, age of consent, removing them so that the child could have a free unfolding of his sexuality. Now, why aren't we talking about the Green Party? Why is it always the Catholic Church? Because the media hate the Catholic Church. That's why. And we're smart enough to figure out now. At least some of us are. You know,
well, I mean, the distinction is the pedophilia wasn't a part of Catholic doctrine. It was a part of the Green Party's doctrine. Right? So.
The encouraging sexual relations between adults and children was part of the Green Party platform. So why aren't they being held responsible?
And this goes back to Wilhelm Reich's philosophy of, because obviously, well, to take a vulnerable child and sexual abuse him, engage in a sexual relationship with a child is, well, by nature abuse, but because the child has no lifetime experience, is not mature. That's how you get at them. That's how you fundamentally alter their inner constitution, the way they think about life. Whereas with an adult is now mature, has a sense of self, has experience that you can't manipulate him as much. So there's a sinister strategy to this, is you're targeting children because children are vulnerable. It's predatorial.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, well, does this surprise you? Isn't this what education is?
Well, that's another thing is
forming young people, except that now you're deforming young people because you don't have any moral parameters whatsoever. I mean, Reich was a communist, a Jew, a communist, and a Marxist. Now, where's the moral compass there? Doesn't exist.
And he realized that the way you undermine the civil or political constitution is you undermine the sexual constitution. You become a sexual revolutionary.
He was engaged in psychological warfare against the Catholic Church in Austria at that time. That was the whole point of what he was doing. He was trying to overthrow the government of Austria, and it was a Catholic government, and he had to undermine the church to do that. And so he was basically trying to encourage masturbation among young people and among the clergy. He had this great description there where he says it's pointless to discuss the existence of God with clergy. What you do is you get them involved in sexual activity, and then the idea of God evaporates from their mind. That was his program. Well, that's what they did to the Catholic Church. this is what happened. Have the Catholics figured this out yet? Probably not. They're too busy internalizing the commands of their oppressors. They're too busy trying to climb the greasy pole of political power in places like the Democratic or the Republican Party. They're too busy doing that. They're too busy trying to be liked by their enemies or doing the bidding of their enemies and corrupting their fellow Catholics. That's the problem.
And again, if pedophilia is wrong because you can't engage in a sexual relationship with a child, they're not capable of entering into a relationship like that. But the effort by Hollywood, by Madison Avenue, by the educational establishments to sexualize children has been going, well, full force since the 1970s, right? I mean, there's been attempt, whether it's through sexual education, education.
What is sex ed?
Yes.
It's an attempt to sexualize children, obviously. Get children involved in an early age in sexual activity, corrupt their morals, and then thereby control them.
Mm-hmm. One of the hidden agendas behind the AIDS crisis or AIDS scare was the sexualization of children. I think it was the National Research Council that was working with the Rockefeller Foundation and the Russell Sage Foundation, and also I think the U.S. Public Health Service, and they issued a study in 1989. I have my notes here somewhere. Yeah, here it is. It was in 1989 that they published AIDS, Sexual and Intravenous Drug Use. And in the report, it was pretty much revealed that under the pretext of a public health matter or a public health program, they were engaged in a very ambitious social engineering scheme designed to change the sexual mores of the public, particularly children and adolescents. So here we have the sexualization of children that's being encouraged by the government. And, of course, there's the fear of AIDS that was used to justify this, because otherwise introducing sexual matters or issues to children, otherwise parents would be opposed to it. But if you scare them with AIDS, saying that unless they get this education, they might contract AIDS, parents would, however reluctantly acquiesce to it. But I think it was in this report, stated that despite recent indications of a greatly increased tolerance of sexual explicitness in the media and literature, that reluctance remains strong in much of the population. It is particularly strong in the instance of the education of children and adolescents. So the AIDS scare was used to sexualize children.
Never let a crisis go to waste.
Yeah, which is why Planned Parenthood was always behind sexual education, and it's always behind contraceptives, because they know if increased use of contraceptives, you have increased sexual activity, which means you have increased unplanned pregnancies, and of course increased abortions, which is where they make their money.
Yes. You
know? So there's a strategy there. So
yeah.
But we're talking about the sexualization of society in general, which the U.S. government, Hollywood, the intelligence agencies, the foundations were all behind. Then they're shocked that once they poison the well, they act like they're shocked, but that it had some sort of effect on the Catholic Church as an institution, because obviously the communities they were drawing from are going to be affected by the sexual revolution, which was unleashed by Wilhelm Reich, the Ford Foundation, the Rockefeller Foundation, Hollywood, Madison Avenue.
Right.
Yeah. So, but they don't take any ownership for it. Any responsibility? Surprise, surprise.
No, they blame the victim. And you've got these contradictory commands here, where you do what they say, and then they attack you for doing what they said. So which is it? It's like nobody's supposed to remember what happened in the 1970s, I guess. No one's supposed to remember that period of time. It's too far in the past. And everything is that contradicts the current regime is supposed to go down the memory hole.
Good example, the media companies, the cable companies, the digital media, the internet companies that pump pornography through the internet, which sexualizes thousands of children, take no responsibility for their product.
No. And then there's another way of blaming the victim here. There's a Showtime has a series called Shameless, and the subtext here is the guy's name is Gallagher, and it's pretty clear there's a Catholic element to this, okay, but he's an alcoholic and his life is a mess and the children are all a mess. And so there's a kind of voyeurism in every sense of the word here of watching these poor people kind of try and struggle. Well, this is set in Chicago. Well, I don't know how old is Gallagher supposed to be. Is he 60 years old or something like that? He's probably a baby boomer. Well, what was going on in Chicago at this time? The full force of the regime was being brought to destroy these neighborhoods in Chicago, to disrupt these parishes, disrupt the communities, and therefore disrupt the transmission of the faith. And so the people in places like Philadelphia, for example, Philadelphia was, I have a friend, a late friend who I miss dearly, Tom Herron, who used to write for us. He talked about, I was in and out of Philadelphia in the 70s. I lived in Germany for a couple of years. But he said it once the church's authority collapsed, you had everybody going to 12-step programs because their lives immediately got out of control, you know? Now, who's going to take responsibility for this? Who's going to take responsibility? Who were the people that were that were deliberately breaking up the neighborhoods here? Let's say Gallagher's neighborhood, the Irish neighborhood, the Polish neighborhood, the Italian neighborhood. It was the government. It was the government. It was up to their eyeballs in basically destroying these neighborhoods, destroying the Catholic community, destroying the Catholic parishes, and disrupting the church's ability to transmit the faith to these people. That's what happened. And the stupid Catholics still don't know that this happened. They went off to the suburbs, or they stayed and their children turned into walking disasters. Well, who's responsible for that? Was it Gallagher, or is he the victim here? You know? This is the type of stuff that goes on and on and on. You're blaming this guy. I don't know. I don't know how the story. I saw one episode. I don't have any intention to see any more episodes. I don't know how it's going to be resolved. Okay. But I have some type of idea that basically Gallagher is going to be blamed. And it shows contempt for the father, for the weakness of the father. But who is responsible for destroying Gallagher's community? Who is responsible for weakening the church so that he felt that he didn't have to follow the rules that the church had laid down for him early on? Who was responsible for that? Was that the church? No, it was the government. It was the government and all these oligarchic forces that colluded to basically break the political power of the Catholic Church over this, whatever you want to call it, let's say 70-year period after beginning after World War II. And that's the result. The result is this mess that we have today. And once you have the mess, the solution is to blame the victim. And that's why we have movies like Spotlight. Blame the victim.
Yeah, I happened to see Spotlight. It was generally well put together movie. I'd say that. It was well acted. But the idea in the movie was the source of the scandal, the cause of the scandal, was the Catholic community was too closely knit, and the Catholic Church was too powerful, and it took the intervention of a conscientious Jewish editor to drive this investigation of the Catholic Church.
For Jewish editors.
Yeah.
First of all, they've got it completely backwards. Paul Blanchard, the guy who wrote American Freedom and Catholic Power, the great anti-Catholic book that sparked the anti-Catholic crusade after World War II, went to Bridesburg, to the Polish parish in Philadelphia, on the instructions of John Dewey and Albert Barnes, the guy who got rich on Argyrol for syphilis, doctor, medical doctor from Philadelphia. And what he realized is, yes, it was a close-knit community, and the point of this close-knit community was to keep out people like Paul Blanchard. So they were right to do that. What happened here, the loosening of the sexual morals in the Catholic community took place after these people broke down the barriers of the community. They broke down the parish boundaries, sent the people off into the suburbs, corrupted their children with one thing after another, you know, music, drugs, the whole thing. And then they blamed the Catholic Church. Because it was too close. No, it wasn't too close. The problem is the exact opposite. It was too open. It was too open to a corrupt culture. The people were too stupid to understand that television was a bad thing to have in your home. The music was corrupting your children and so on. The schools were corrupting your children and so on and so forth. And so you had basically people, Catholics, open to a culture that was bent to destroy them. And being praised by organs like the New York Times and the Boston Globe whenever some Catholic would open up one more avenue of entry for penetration of the Catholic community. All those people who were in reality double agents were all praised as far-sighted visionaries at the time, including pedophiles like Father Shanley and Father Gauguin.
Mm-hmm. It was always the if you look at most of these priests, they're implicated in these things. They're the liberal priests, the progressive priests.
They were being praised by the ordinance of liberal opinion.
Mm-hmm. And my own personal observation is, growing up Catholic, is I had the good fortune of always having rather orthodox, strong, positive priests around, and they formed my idea of the Catholic Church and what I expected from it. And there was never any scandals, anything like that. But the fact that my diocese was particularly orthodox in its teachings meant that I grew up with a very positive view of the Church. Whereas many people I know who've been alienated from the Church, a lot of lapsed Catholics, they grew up in this post-Vatican II 70s church, idea where the Church was kind of very weak and there was no instruction of the doctrine, the catechism, and it was typical suburban type parishes. And so subsequently they fall away from the faith because their experience with it was never positive. It was always rather weak, and the priests didn't have anything much to offer. They were very liberal, if not heretical in many of their teachings.
And, because they were listening to the New York Times.
Yes.
Or some other organ of public opinion that was deliberately trying to subvert what they believed. And they were too stupid to understand what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
That was across the board. And now we're all sadder but wiser. Well, maybe we're not even wiser. Some of us are, but maybe we're just sadder.
But this goes back to what we've had earlier talks, of course, with your books, particularly The Slaughter of Cities, and also Libido Dominandi, and also the Jewish Revolutionary Spirit, because there's a big, strong Jewish component to the strategy. But this idea where around the 1950s, it was, Catholic power had waxed, I guess, with the election of John F. Kennedy in 1960. And that's just when John Courtney Murray is being promoted by Time magazine, and he's in league with the Rockefellers. And this coincides with the Vatican II period, where, again, I think David Wimhoff makes the point, whereas what happened was Time Life and the American news media, liberal American news media, they controlled the spin interpretation of that council. And that informed most Catholics' attitude wasn't so much the doctrine that came out of Vatican II, but it was the spin, the interpretation of Vatican
right.
II. Which,
this is what I mean when I say this is an empire, an information empire.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically Time magazine controlled the interpretation of Vatican II. They had more power, interpretive power, than the Catholic Church itself over, and basically said that the document Dignitatis Humanae said something that it didn't say. It basically, the interpretation was that the Church now endorsed the separation of church and state. That is not true. The same thing happened with the Jews and Nostra Aetate, where according to the Jewish interpretation is now basically normative for the Catholic Church, which is basically that the Church was wrong for 1900 years, that it was anti-Semitic, intrinsically anti-Semitic, and that the Jews did not kill Christ. This is all part of the package that is just being promoted because these organs have more interpretive power than the Catholic Church itself. That's the problem. That's why this is an important moment, because that powerful media propaganda machine is now being challenged by WikiLeaks and what we're doing now, this whole internet operation. It's a challenge to that. I'm not a guy who believes that technology solves our problems, but there is a new moment here, and it's up to us to make use of it to explain what's going on. I think that's what we have to do here, and that's what we're trying to do tonight.
Yes, and of course you mentioned Nostra Aetate, and I was came across an article a few weeks ago about when a few years ago the Catholic Church released this article said that Catholics were not to actively try to evangelize among the Jews?
Well, no. First of all, the Vatican itself issued a document on 50 years of Catholic-Jewish dialogue.
Okay.
And in this document, they said the church has no official apostolate to the Jews, but if you're an individual Catholic, you can feel free to evangelize the Jews or tell them what a wonderful religion you have. This is preposterous. What are they talking about here? Why is there this contradiction? This makes no sense. Makes no sense. Because they don't know how to solve the problem. They don't know what to do. They have painted themselves into a corner. The church is now cut off from its own teaching on the Jews. Just cut off. They've given the Jews veto power now over the saints. Who gets named the saint? If you said something that was perfectly acceptable 50 years ago and the Jews don't like it, then they have veto power, and that Father Dahon, for example, is not going to be named as canonization proceeds and put on hold.
Yeah, and there's also the issue with Bishop Williamson.
Well, that's, yeah. I mean, when you get into that, Bishop Williamson is a story unto himself. I think he has a theological death wish and is basically determined to die outside of the Catholic Church. He got himself excommunicated again for consecrating bishops. That's Bishop Williamson's problem. But the way the church handled it was terrible. The press secretary, basically, when he said something like he was entrapped in by some Swedish radio station, Swedish TV station. They were interviewing in Germany, and they said they're packing up the cameras. He told me this. I met with him in London. He told me the story. Packing up the cameras, ready to go. Oh, by the way, what do you think about the Holocaust? Well, this is a trap. And Williamson said, maybe 600,000 people. Well, he broke the law in Germany. It's an outrageous law. It shouldn't be on the books, but he broke the law. And this caused this huge furor. And then the Jews come to the Vatican and they say, you need to excommunicate Bishop Williamson again. And at this point, Father Lombardi should have simply said, having a difference of opinion about how many people died in World War II is not an excommunicable offense. And that's the end. Next question. But no, Lombardi had to stick his foot in his mouth and go into this whole thing about anti-Semitism and blah, blah, blah. So he just made a bad situation worse by doing what he did.
Yeah, and it's now, if you don't agree with the exact number, it's a grounds for excommunication, or at least to avoid, I guess, those who got in the way of this negotiations regarding the – come to some agreement with this SSPX society or something?
In many ways, it was a sideshow. I met with Bishop Williamson right after I gave the talk in Ireland, went over to London, and I walked in the door. I mean, he had stayed at our house. A nice guy. I don't agree with him, his theology, but a nice guy. I go into the headquarters of the SSPX. The first thing he tells me is he's had a letter on his desk upstairs, which says, I agree with Vatican II in light of tradition. All he had to do was sign that, and the whole story would have been over. But I said, well, then go upstairs and sign it. That's the only reason I've come here, is to talk to you about that. Go up and sign it, and then we'll talk about baseball or tennis. It was wonderful. We'll talk about tennis for the rest of the time. And no, he couldn't do it. And for 3 hours, he tried to explain to me why the SSPX was the real church and Rome would have to apologize and ask to be admitted into the SSPX, basically what he was saying.
Oh, okay.
So I'm sorry. He, a man who had the moment, a historical moment, and he blew it. I mean, that's a long, complicated story. And you have to that one incident was mishandled. It should have been handled the way I just said.
So here we have another example of sellout Catholics, like Tim Kaine, Joe Biden, John Podesta, These guys are just, again, as you say, trying to warm the way up the grease up the, you know, up the American flagpole, I guess, or totem pole. I want to climb the way up the, you know, the higher into the hierarchy, you know, the political establishment, and you know they'll sell off their religion. It's no big deal. Their principles, because they want power, and that's not a news story, I guess. I mean, that's politics, and yeah, as you say, there's a history of this. There's the few exceptions that we pointed out today prove the rule that these Catholic politicians, they're, you know, obviously they don't wear their Catholicism on their sleeve. They sell it down the river in pursuit of power. And that's kind of been the understanding, at least since, 1960, I think, when it was articulated by that Jesuit. What was his name?
John Courtney Murray.
Might have been John Courtney Murray, but there was someone else, I think, gave a speech. I thought about that. Name fails me now. David Wemhoff mentioned it. He was talking about it in an interview. But anyway, John Courtney Murray, I guess, represented that attitude, idea. The acceptable Catholic in America. And this was Americanism. This was Henry Luce, and the idea that as David Wemhoff puts it, the America or the United States teaches the Church does not teach America.
Right.
And American Catholics have internalized that idea and become fully Americanized, and we see that. Well, we'll probably see it. More on the right, maybe with the National Review crowd, maybe the CIA.
They were part of it too.
Yeah, Michael Novak, Wilmer F. Buckley, that crowd. You know?
Right. Yeah. I mean, basically, you have to join one of the political parties and compromise your Catholic beliefs according to one of the other party's principles. Mm-hmm. So that's simple. You know, they've been a miserable failure, as far as I can tell, all the way back to the 1930s.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when they were not a failure.
Yeah, in the 30s when they could flex their muscle politically because they had the community support. They had these Catholic neighborhoods, these parishes. That's,
they knew they were a hated minority, and they acted accordingly.
As you said, the church back then knew it had enemies, right?
That's right. That's right. Vatican II was disastrous in that regard, as was the election of John F. Kennedy. And, as you mentioned, John Courtney Murray was on the cover of Time magazine within a month of Kennedy's election, telling American Catholics how to behave.
Mm-hmm. And I guess there was in the 1950s, it was Henry Luce went to Italy, gave a speech at Padua University. I'm sorry?
Prodeo.
Prodeo, that's the name of the university. And according to David Wenhoff, Prodeo had been the recipient of OSS money through Bill Donovan, I guess you could say Catholic, who internalized the commands of his oppressors. That speech was written by John Courtney Murray.
Yes.
And of course, at the time, his wife was the ambassador to Italy, and Italy was this is the early Cold War period. That was they had just beaten back the communists in Italy at that time.
Yeah.
By using the mafia and the drug trades. That was the what's his name the guy, Lucky Luciano, right?
Lucky Luciano, yeah.
Yeah. And this was this wasn't the beginning of it, but this is an example of the CIA. In order to operate this black, to have this black op against the communists in Italy, they got involved in the drug trade. So, but that's a whole other story, but it shows how dirty this business is. But you've articulated before how this Cold War scenario, this is sort of like a bad deal for the Catholic Church. Can you quickly get into that before we... Because I think that's important understanding.
Basically, the church felt that they needed the American Empire to protect them against communism.
Mm-hmm.
Always a bad move. And they lost because they were dragooned into the anti-communist crusade. They lost all ability to criticize what was going on in America. At the same time, the CIA is waging a war on two fronts. It's waging a war against communism, but it's also waging a war against the Catholic Church. So they're compromised. They think they're being treated as allies when they're really being used and covertly undermined by the same people who are claiming they're their friends.
Mm-hmm. And this produces – well, I think this produces a lot of the scandals, whether it's the Vatican Bank or the sex scandals, I think.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah.
Yeah.
Because you had, what, Malachi Martin, who I think you, Malachi Martin, have – he was funded by B'nai B'rith, was it?
B'nai B'rith and the AJC to basically produce the document they wanted in the Second Vatican Council.
Yeah, and he's the one – got involved – he was there at the Vatican too. And there's the American Jewish Committee that also was behind the publication of the Authoritarian Personality, which posited – that American society was leaning towards fascism, and the only way to stop that would be to break up the traditional family and weaken Christianity, correct?
Yeah. And that was, they succeeded.
And that would be – the way they would do that would be through cultural warfare, psychological warfare.
That's right. That's what they did.
Which you see being played out with the with Time Life, with Hollywood, with later, I guess you could say later on, with the development of of cable television, the music, and everything. So it was a broad based psychological warfare program using education, media, news, everything.
I guess the only guy who doesn't know this is Sandy Newman. Where is Sandy Newman then?
And just you've gotten to the point now where the church finds it difficult to oppose being forced to pay for contraceptives and abortion through mandates from the Department of Health and Human Services. Well, listen, I think we covered it. So any other observations you want to make about this topic, or is there anything else we missed? Or
I think we covered the whole thing.
Yeah. So, okay. Well, Dr. Jones, thank you for coming back on the show.
My pleasure.
Thank you for being so patient with my technical difficulties.
And no problem.
I'm in the middle of your not in the middle. I'm much. I am reading your book, Barren Metal.
And God bless you.
And I'm enjoying it. I know it's big, but it's hard to put down. I love it. I wish I had more time to sit down and just read. But it's a great book. And perhaps when I get through that, bring it back on, and we can talk about that book.
Yeah, I'd be happy to.
Because I guess you could say it's a great way to sum up. Well, I think I read Libido Dominandi. I read The Jewish Revolutionary Spirit. Well, sorry, I read Libido Dominandi, The Slaughter of Cities, The Jewish Revolutionary Spirit, and now I'm reading Barren Metal. And really, it is like a series. They're all interrelate.
Yeah, they are. You're right.
So it's a great series of books that you've written. So just congratulate you on that, and I will let you go for the night. And thank you.
Thank you.
Good night.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.